Hello, and welcome to the Movie Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting a movie that we think you'll find interesting. In this episode, I'm joined by my sister, and we're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion on Tron Legacy from 2010, which is not quite, but nearly 30 years after the original, which was in 82, so 28 years. And they seem to fudge a little bit on how much time had elapsed between the two.
Yeah.
Because I think they established Sam was 29?
7.
27. Okay. Well, that meant Flynn had to find somebody, get married, have the kid, etc. And they never identify the wife, Sam's mom.
Right.
Which isn't relevant at all to the story. I don't even think they established, I guess.
We never established what happened to the girl from the first movie.
You didn't establish what happened to the girl, but the mom died when Sam was 12, and the grandparents shortly thereafter, I think.
I thought mom died before
Flynn
went into the machine.
Okay. All of that's real world stuff, and they just kind of gloss over it. But it's very much a, I don't want to say a coming of age story for Sam, but definitely a legacy story.
It's a rite of passage story for Sam.
That's a better way to put it. Because at the end, he takes over the company, and at the beginning, he has zero desire to do that.
Okay, let's slow down a bit. The DVD had that 10-minute special we watched.
Yeah, Tron the Next Day. Which is filmed or released in 2011, but takes place before the movie because it was, again, a DVD extra, like you said.
And it really covers from right after the first movie to, I would say, after this movie.
Why do you say after this movie?
Because it includes Sam taking over the company and some of the decisions he makes having taken over the company.
Oh, with kind of him putting
Alan back in charge.
Alan back in charge. Yeah.
And we have things that he's done as chairman.
So it's kind of the day after both movies.
Yes.
It definitely covered a lot of the gap, but there were things that it was filling in that were not in the movie and things in the movie that were not in it. So if you have the opportunity to watch it, again, it's 10, 11 minutes. It's worth watching.
It helped me to understand the movie better.
Yeah.
The really big thing it gave information-wise that technically is in the movie, but is so soft-pedaled it's easy to miss, is that Sam is the major shareholder of income.
Well, Sam's the major shareholder in that his father has been missing forever and a day, and that there's a lot of conspiracy theories and other theories as to what happened to him.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a major factor in Sam's life. Because he was kind of without, I was going to say without the father figure, but Alan stepped in for that.
Yes.
And I think having watched The Next Day before Tron Legacy, it bridged the gap in terms of if we hadn't, we'd be starting the film with who is this kid? Oh, they're establishing 25, 30-year-old, you know, 27-year-old kid for somebody who didn't have any significant other at the end of the first movie, but they need to have a legacy. Therefore, having the almost documentary news style stuff from Tron the Next Day to do that info dump eased the opening of Tron Legacy, filled in a couple of gaps, set Sam up. And then when we started watching the actual movie, it's like, okay, well, they got to start by setting him up there.
Right. But it also made some of adult-ish Sam's actions make more sense.
Yes. I'm curious how much of the writing for the Next Day featurette was based on reviews, complaints, confusion from the theatrical release.
Fair question, yeah.
Or things that had just gotten cut on the editing room floor. Not that I think any of the footage was from that.
Mm-mm.
Now, one of the other things we've got to talk about, because I felt it was a bit of a major factor, was in the grid, they've upped the graphics level, they've upped the resolution, the look, the feel of it. But we've also got Clue, which is really Clue 2.0.
Yes.
And it's a digital copy, effectively, of Kevin Flynn. And it doesn't age.
Mm-hmm.
So when we've got the flashback scene to Flynn and his son Sam, when we see Clue throughout the movie, it's a younger Jeff Bridges than who filmed the movie.
Yeah.
And he, of course, is there as the aged version of himself. And I couldn't tell. I mean, they credited the character as him, as Jeff Bridges. But there were times I was almost wondering, was there somebody else standing in?
What I felt they did was they basically told the makeup department, age him slightly for present and basically put on as much makeup as you can to smooth his features for past. And then we will digitally enhance the de-aging. Because you couldn't soft focus those scenes because other people were in them.
But they did block it to where his face was away from us or in the far end. He was in the background or whatever as much as they could.
Yeah.
I guess for me, particularly when he's giving the speech to the army, Clue.
Yes.
It was a video game version of the character.
Yes.
And when you've got Clue and Cora, it felt like you had a video game character acting against a human.
Mm-hmm.
At least in the face, everything above the neck, the arms, the rest of that. Yeah, that was a person.
Yeah.
And there was a scene in, I think it was the second Iron Man movie, where they de-aged Robert Downey Jr. And I thought did a fairly good job. This, and I don't know the timeline of when this was, well, this would have been earlier, by a year or two, probably. I don't remember when Iron Man 2 came out. This hit that uncanny valley.
Yeah.
Not too hard in the gutter of it or whatever, but enough that, yeah, I get what they're doing. It looks like a young Jeff Bridges, but it does not look like young Jeff Bridges.
Yeah. And for a long time, makeup departments thought, basically, if we just fill all the wrinkles with makeup and smooth out the face, we've made them look younger.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really felt they were just layering on that makeup and a combination of that and basically moisturizing to puff up the skin.
I didn't even see it as a makeup thing. It felt very digital.
And I think they were doing that over it.
Okay. And the acting portrayal was good, but obviously now we're, what, 15 years later.
Mm-hmm.
So our expectations are definitely higher.
Well, but on that front, I liked how they updated, I guess they would be the security bots, the things that flew around with the two legs.
Mm-hmm. Oh, those, they had a name with the R in the first movie. It wasn't the replicators or it was something.
Recognizer?
Recognizer, I think it was. The Raider Recognizer, I think it was. Yeah. Those, they kept the look and the feel big picture wise. So it had the right layout, the right architecture. But now where the middle section could lower down on the legs, the feet of the legs were a little bit different.
Yeah.
They seemed to, I don't want to say rethink the design of them, but keep the design, but rethink the implementation of them.
Yep.
Same with the light cycles. Going to where we had both jetpacks and, you know, aircraft-type versions of light cycles.
The jetpacks seem to be a kind of a combo of that with, like, it's not fair to say insect wings. But
very much. To me, that was out of Ant-Man and Wasp design school.
It's funny, because that's, I was going to say wasp wings, but yeah. I wasn't sure that was fair.
It's insectish in some way, shape, or form. They kept the design aesthetic of the original movie, but implemented it with then current technology and then current mindset. It looked like the actors in the grid were wearing suits that actually lit up.
Yes.
And that, I think, helped a ton.
Mm-hmm. They kept the very black environment with the neon highlights.
Mm-hmm.
But now the light cycle grid and the gaming zones were three-dimensional.
Yes.
Instead of much more two-dimensional.
Well, and had an audience.
Yeah, that intrigued me.
Yeah. It was a more realized society there.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked that. I don't know why programs would need a bar or arena games or what have you, but they had it. So I didn't object to that. There were a few things. And with a sequel, you get some stuff where it's let's, I don't say repeat, but pay homage or do again what worked for the first. And there are others where let's do that, but let's flip it. Let's reverse it.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the places where we got the reversals, when we got the light cycles, this time we were rooting for the blue team, not the yellow team.
Yep.
When they are trying to get towards the portal, they're in that star sail kind of a ship. That was a repeat-ish of what had happened before.
Mm-hmm.
With a little bit of a twist here and there.
Yeah.
As to what happens and the conversation that takes place. But there were a lot of things where they were following, as they should, the rules of the franchise, the trajectory of the franchise. But again, sometimes you've just got to follow it in the same direction. Other times, flip it. This time, again, with the coming of age and it being the son who comes in and goes out, there were a few differences there, but nothing that felt like they didn't understand what they were making a sequel of.
I was unclear when we got towards the end if they fully understood what they'd set up with the identity disc.
How so?
What determines who goes out? The identity disc or the avatar in the beam?
I think what would have allowed Clue to go out would have been the avatar disc that matched him but wasn't him. So he could have used Flynn's disc to get out. But because Quora was, what did they phrase, an ISO.
Okay.
Different rules applied.
Okay, I'll give you that.
Because she was the equivalent of a digital life form. And it also seemed like Clue had been able to take the identity disc and turn it from just an identity disc where he could get out, he or Flynn, into a master key.
Yeah, that master key thing was interesting.
Because Flynn's not only a programmer, but the programmer, effectively, of the grid.
The creator.
Because Flynn Sr. was exhibiting powers and abilities that Sam either didn't know how to tap into or didn't have.
Mm-hmm. I do wish they had set Sam up better as a programmer. They did to a degree with the...
Well, the board meeting and swapping stuff out, But even a couple of lines of dialogue with Alan saying, you know, I know you quit college because you were bored there. You already knew the stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I know it, you know it. The board now knows it, sort of comment. There are a number of ways they could have done that.
Yeah.
I was a little disappointed with the boardroom scene. I think Dillinger Jr. was set up but had no payoff.
I would agree with that.
But I think that was just to do a callback to the first movie.
Yeah.
And needlessly so. It would have been nice to have had a reference to the original Dillinger from the first movie.
I think they felt they gave us that in the scene with all the TVs that was the bridging the time gap.
Was that in here or was that in the next day? I'm blurring them together a little. I think they covered it a little in both.
I thought that was in here.
I guess having Junior still being a member of the company, that was when he was specifically referenced that Junior would be in, was in the next day.
Right, right.
But we flat out see him in the boardroom in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think any of that was needed. I would have almost gone with Dillinger had been unceremoniously fired after the first movie, or at the tail end of, I should say. But in the intervening years, had gotten to where he'd become like a tech critic and could have been NCOM's strongest critic.
Yeah.
And if it had been, hey, the new OS has gone out, we were going to charge, oh, it's out there for free, you could have immediately had a news article of Dillinger just pouncing on that, them announcing, oh, it was intentional. And you know what I mean? Play that off.
Yeah.
And if you had had somebody who was just the PR person, instead of it's Dillinger Jr. who's one of the coders or something, that would have worked better for me. But the other thing I would have liked to have seen, absolutely didn't need to be in the movie, though, was a cameo by Peter Jurassic.
Yes. Yes.
Because his program in the first movie was, I want to say, an accounting thing?
No, that was Ram, who was the actuary program.
Actuary. But what was, because he was some kind of business thing. I thought it was accounting, not actuary, though. But I could be wrong. I don't remember.
I don't remember if Jurassic told us what kind of program he was.
He said there was some kind of mistake. I'm not...
Oh, yes, that's right. He did tell us there was a mistake, but I forget what kind of program he said he was.
But it would have been nice to kind of discover after the fact that Flynn had sought, or stumbled across him, sought him out, whatever, and hired him out of guilt of having killed his program.
Yes, yes.
So... I liked the film. It had some good action sequences. It had some great visuals.
I love the light cycles.
The light cycles were good. Again, I liked doing the aerial version of it. That opened up a lot of stuff.
That was fun.
And it was original while paying homage to.
Yeah.
And I think the way they set up the actual light cycle thing is almost a grudge match.
Uh-huh.
Was kind of interesting as well. And the only thing we didn't really get was the tanks from the first movie.
Mm-hmm.
We saw a few things that were similar-ish to them. I think the ISOs and kind of the life form that sprung up in the grid was kind of the equivalent of, oh, I don't say the midichlorians and Jedi magic, but you know what I mean. It was the religious out of nowhere stuff.
That's funny because I took that to be representative of what we all fear. We all fear...
Oh, kind of the singularity and they just spring to life or become conscious?
Yeah, something forming out of nothing, whether it's within AI or something, in these digital environments. It's why we all fear androids getting too much autonomy, etc.
And that's fair. I just didn't feel they presented it in a way there. It almost seemed like an argument for evolution versus creationism.
Yeah.
And as much as there was religious undertones in the first movie, that seemed to almost, I don't say be lacking here, but not really pop out to me the way it did in the first.
Yeah. Well, they were pretty blatant about it in the first. And
yeah.
I wasn't sure it was either warranted, earned, or belonged the way they put it in the first.
I felt there was a bit more of a religious feeling with Flynn in the first. And that was not, you know, religion, but exuberant tech religion.
Yeah.
Whereas here, he was much more literally Zen.
Yes, yes.
Even commenting on that to his son, if you're really messing with my Zen.
Yeah.
So I thought there was some fun aspects. There were a few things, like in Flynn's Batcave out in the outskirts of the digital realm, where it's like, that's an odd layout and design choice for the place in terms of bedrooms having windows to other bedrooms, the master bedroom just opening into the living room with no door walls, whatever. Granted, it was his place. But even the bedroom that Sam goes into, one, why was it there? Two, why were there so many humanish things?
Yeah, the paper books.
That I took out in the living room as all Flynn having created them for familiarity.
Yeah, and that's what I decided on. But
Cora's room had a dresser. It had a hand mirror.
Yeah.
It had, it seemed like a container of, I don't know, perfume or whatever, or decorative sorts of things that felt very human. Not to say it would have necessarily been utilitarian for a digital thing, but the design felt more hotel-like or movie rich person place than this is what programs in the grid would have lived in, or even a human avatar in the grid.
What intrigued me about Flynn's place was it seemed like the lights were only activated / motion sensitive for him. Flynn.
Yeah.
And Cora had lived there for how long?
No idea. Ages. Since the Purge.
Yeah.
Yeah. There were a couple of things that I just didn't quite understand.
Now, the water fireplace I thought was pretty cool looking. Totally impractical and unrealistic and didn't belong there.
There were a few things like that where it's like, okay, that's how a digital version of this would be. You want something like a fireplace. They don't have fire per se. But they've got sprites and little electronic-y doodad type things. So have something that looks like a fireplace.
Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah, I would have liked to have seen more things like that.
Yeah.
And we never even got, even at the bar, the sense that the water is energy the way we got in the first movie.
Mm-hmm.
And again, none of these are flaws or anything, but just differences.
Yeah. There was something in the movie, and now I can't remember what it was, but I remember being struck by the fact that in the digital world, things were very binary. It was either yes or no. It was either positive or negative.
Well, it might have been in the equivalent of the disc battle in the arena where the gravity flipped upside down. And it seemed to be it went from pointing one direction to boom, it's 180 degrees the other.
Yeah. Well, and you had no training for the games this time.
Yeah. And they could have set up Sam as being a video gamer a bit better.
I agree.
Even if it had just been an arcade game or two in Sam's place when Alan visits, and he's walking around saying, oh, you really have beaten your dad's high scores on this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, granted, that would have, I think most video games, when you unplug them, reset, but I think Flynn would have generated arcade games that, you know, permanently.
Yes.
Particularly at his level.
That would very much fit with that character.
Yeah. Yeah. So I enjoyed it. Did I think it was brilliant? No. I think the first movie was exploring new ground, did it in an interesting way, and I enjoyed the parallels of the people and their programs that almost was absent here.
I was thinking that too. I mean, we had some people that played dual roles, but not many. Really, it was Flynn and Clue.
Yeah, which again harkens back to the first film. Well, Tron, well, presumably Tron. We never see Tron's face.
Okay, that drove me nuts. How did Flynn keep identifying Tron?
There was an aspect, I think, of the fighting style that he would have recognized. And the dual discs or something like that.
I guess.
But they could have and should have established that.
I mean, yeah, I'm sorry. Tron needed a sign on his chest that said, I am Tron or something.
Well, he had a little thing that had three lights across and one down in the center that formed a T.
That was lost on me. I apologize.
No, it's all right. I saw it and I thought, well, I mean, that's not a clear indication, but I'm not seeing it on anyone else. Maybe I just wasn't looking on the others.
I half expected some of the people from the boardroom to appear in the Digital Spaces programs, and I don't think any of them did. If they did, it was lost on me.
Yeah, if they did, it was totally lost on me. I didn't recognize anyone in one realm from the other realm. And yeah. Really, the boardroom scene would have been the only place we would have had those sorts of faces.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that was disappointing, because as we rewatched Tron this time, almost every major character we saw, yeah, we recognized. Ram being the exception, and the human version of Ram was really highlighted in the Next Day featurette.
Yeah.
So I felt that helped bridge the gap there. But then to not have that kind of duality in this film,
yeah,
was disappointing. And for Clue not to be a program so much as a digital copy,
yeah,
bothered me a little bit. That just seemed to open some doors that shouldn't have been opened.
Clue almost seemed to have been a program gone wrong.
It was a program gone right with bad instructions.
Yes. Good phrasing.
Create the perfect thing. Perfect's not possible, and all sorts of travesties can be done in the name of perfection.
Yes.
And that's exactly the path they went down.
And a program that was never fine-tuned, reprogrammed, adjusted.
Yeah. So I think the plan after around the time of this was, let's keep going with Tron. I think this was not as well received as it maybe might have been hoped to be.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why it took another 15 years to get another sequel.
Yeah.
And it's good enough source material that I think it's one of those things that is prime for people who want to go dip back into that well.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like some other properties where the sequels have been, either all have been or any one have been so good to really make that, let's keep going back more often. I mean, you look at the second Terminator film, and as good as Terminator was, I think a lot of people would agree that the second was as good or better.
Yeah.
And that kept the franchise going for a while. And this wasn't one of those where it's like, wow, this is inventive. Wow, this was a better execution. I mean, technically, it was in many cases. But I'm really hopeful that the third film stays true to the property, harkens back to the roots a little bit better,
mm-hmm,
but also maybe charts some new ground that feels like a natural extension of the property.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are times where you can chart new ground, but it's like, yeah, that's not what the property's about or where it should have gone.
Yeah. And I have high hopes for the visuals.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I think every year that elapses raises the bar on movie visuals in general, but more specifically for particular franchises. Certainly Tron, where it's like, let's go in the computer and whatnot, mm-hmm, shoots it through the roof. Along the lines, as one would expect, The Matrix would get better and better visuals. Same with, just because of their legacy and the nature of where they stand in the sci-fi community, Star Wars,
mm-hmm,
and Terminator, and a few things of that sort.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. Often we talk about having a doodad or a knickknack in the movie that makes for a good something to buy.
Mm-hmm.
As we watched it, I was remembering that the identity discs came out as Frisbees.
I still think the choice of doing them as Frisbees was a
silly one.
Silly one. Interesting one. I don't object to it. It's just, don't fully understand it either.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and they were the Frisbees with the missing center. The flying disc. The original
ones were Frisbees. These were Aero discs or whatever.
There you go. Yeah.
Because these were just the hoop, whereas the original had the full thing.
Yeah.
And it would have been nice to have gotten an explanation for why the difference.
Yeah.
And it may have just as simple been that somebody said, well, okay, we need somebody to design the identities. That's what I like. They're like Frisbees. They go to the store. They only see the modern type. That must be what they're like. I'm not saying that happened.
Yeah, yeah.
But I can easily imagine.
Yeah. The other thing that came out after Tron Legacy was USB drives that were shaped like the light cycle. Those were cute.
I think Hasbro is currently releasing light cycle toys, I think either based on the more recent movie or an anniversary of the original or some such. I don't know. I don't know why, but I know they're doing a push on some Tron stuff. Light cycles are iconic.
Mm-hmm.
And there are few movies that get some particular item into the mass consciousness that way.
And this film had the Tron arcade game.
Yes. Yeah. Which I recall playing when I was younger.
Yeah.
And I think it had one of the more original controller layouts, because you had the joystick with the trigger, and then you had the shuttle dial, mm-hmm. for where you'd be moving the character around, rotating his arm to position it, firing off the discs, and things of that sort. So, in an era when so many games were a more standard joystick and 1 to 3 buttons.
Yeah.
Or sometimes 6, depending if punch high, punch low, you know, whatever kind of a deal. And there was also an era where, like, the same game would get repainted. Literally, the art assets would change. And it would go from it was a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle video game, to it was the Simpsons video game, to it was the Avengers video game, to the X-Men or what have you. Just replace the art assets. So having something that was so original. And again, seeing that game in Plin's Arcade, having it in a prominent key position,
mm-hmm.
was fun.
Yeah.
So I'm curious about the third film. I hadn't rewatched this one probably since around the time it came out.
Same here.
There were a few things that as we got to, I'm like, oh yeah, now I remember, like Sam's place on the river or what have you.
Yeah.
But so much of it, I just pretty much had forgotten.
Same here.
And it wasn't bad. It just wasn't as memorable as the first.
I remembered the look of the light cycles, but I didn't even remember the three-dimensional ramps.
The ramps, the transparent battlefield, if you will.
Yeah.
Or kind of the quarterstaff or whatever that would pull out to the handles and, you know, form the bike around you.
Yeah.
Which is a callback to sort of how it worked in the first, but in a much more detailed, nuanced manner that they could do when they made the second.
Agreed.
That they couldn't with the first. And I'm curious, 15 years later with the third, what do they do in that regard?
Well, one thing we had in here that was kind of a dropped thread was we picked up the handles to an extra light cycle, put it in the pocket, mm-hmm. and never used it.
Yeah, because I think the person who used it, that sort of thing, was Clue. Because he lost one at one point and then spun up another cycle.
He lost one at one point and then he stole from Tron. But I'm thinking during the original race, Sam.
Sam had picked one up because he was going to give it to the other guy who then got plowed into.
So he put it in his pocket.
But I thought even Clue in that arena had lost his bike as he was jumping up. Something happened to it. And then he had to spin another one up to land. But I also thought Kevin Flynn having created the white light cycle that was the fastest in the realm. And then it just gets handed off to a guy to get chased down. They use it to track back to the kind of the Batcave, if you will. There was no payoff for that.
Yeah. Yeah. If you create the best light cycle in the realm, why is it trackable?
Why is it trackable? And if you are also a programmer, why don't you have a few spares that you could just spin up?
Yeah.
If it had been, how are we going to get there from here? And then Flynn reaches into his robe, tosses a couple of things of here, catch, and suddenly they've got the light cycles.
Maybe it was just me. That was a Jedi robe.
It was definitely a Jedi robe. No argument about that. And all the reflective stuff was on the inside, not the outside.
Yeah.
He's shy.
Okay. Okay.
But it made sense where the character was at.
And after the first movie, you told me that the color codes would probably be more consistent in a future movie, and you were right.
Yes.
Just wanted to give you your 2 points for that.
That was nice. They actually were more consistent.
Yeah.
Because I agree, the first one, they were a little wishy-washy on that. So again, worth seeing, but if there hadn't been the third, I don't know that it would have been worth rewatching the second, whereas the first, I think, is much more timeless.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
Anything else?
I think that does it.
Cool. Thanks for listening to this episode. If you liked this episode, please spread the word about the Comic Book Page podcast by telling your friends and posting a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And please, join our Slack community and let us know what you thought of this episode. I do this podcast because I enjoy talking about comics. So let's talk about comics. The show notes, form, and instructions for how to join our Slack channel can be found at www.comicbookpage.com. The opinions of the co-hosts and guests are their own. The Comic Book Page podcast is copyright John Mayo. And thanks again for listening.